Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and the 2018 first-year coach Q&A series continues with Bellarmine head coach Jim Mitchell, who prior to taking over the Scarlet Knights this past offseason had spent four seasons at Rutgers, prior to which he had spent two seasons as an assistant at Bellarmine. So it's safe to say that you are returning to Louisville, Coach Mitchell. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Excited to be back and excited to be speaking with you today.
So that's kind of where I want to start, because when I think about Bellarmine, one of the things that comes to mind is the unique nature of being in Louisville, Kentucky, and what that entails. And obviously, it entails a couple things, you know, kind of a little bit of a Western outpost, certainly in a market that isn't considered to be a hotbed, and yet rich athletic tradition, both in the University of Louisville as well as Muhammad Ali, etc. And, you know, based on my background, I'm pretty familiar with the quality of lacrosse that is being played and the way in which that's accelerated over the last 10 to 15 years. So, very generally, what's it like to be a Division I head coach in Louisville?
Well, it's a really great opportunity. And as you see the growth of lacrosse, you know, across the country, you see new areas that are developing as real hotbeds. You see what Atlanta's been able to do in the recent years, and obviously Denver, Texas, the West Coast. And when you look at Louisville, you know, it's either considered the most southern of the Midwest cities or the most northern of the southern cities. And I think you can pull like a radius of 3 hours around and see a lot of these developing communities really produce a lot of talent. And I think Louisville has had a small grassroots community for a number of years, but I think it's an opportunity here as a head coach of a Division I team in a college sports-crazed city to really help elevate that and hopefully have a lot of excitement around our program and watch the community grow, you know, as we do as well in the Southern Conference. So that's something that we want to be able to provide this whole area. You know, we have a group of 44 guys and excited coaching staff to be able to not just coach our team, but bring a little bit more visibility to the sport of lacrosse in this region of the country.
And you had the benefit of being familiar with the area and this program, and so obviously your choice to return speaks to your faith in the opportunity. So can you walk us through the thought process to say, yes, I want this to be the next step in my career?
Yeah, well, you know, I've always wanted to be a head coach, and I was certainly, you know, very happy and very fortunate to have the opportunity to be at Rutgers University for the past 4 years, being in the Big Ten, working with Coach Brecht and the administration there. But, you know, I felt like when I left Bellarmine, you know, to be in the Big Ten, it was a decision that I had to make, but I did feel like there was unfinished business. I really loved the culture that had been established. I loved the area and really the potential of the program. The Southern Conference was just starting up, so there was a little bit more of a clear path for an NCAA tournament berth. And there were some nice recruiting pipelines established in North America and in the region and really all over the continent. So, you know, I thought that if we could come back and take some of the lessons I learned in my whole career and you add the experience at the Big Ten and the relationships formed and the strategies implemented there and kind of bring some of that as well as a staff that shares the ideals and core values that I do, I thought there was a lot of untapped potential here at Bellarmine. And then certainly you see what some of the programs have been able to do in the SoCon. I think, you know, Jacksonville, which is a conference rival, comes to mind at how they've been able to experience success pretty quickly with enthusiasm and focus about what they wanted to do as a program. So, you know, we want to be in that conference championship and have an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament, and I think that's very realistic here at Bellarmine.
And in your prior stint, the program experienced some of its all-time highs, some of its best years, and particularly a guy like Dylan Ward, who's gone on to such an illustrious professional and international career, comes to mind as an alum of which I'm sure the program is very proud. So through that lens, you have the particular legitimate experience of attaining success in this program. You know, knowing what you've already said about your ambition as well as the unique elements of Louisville, what are some of the other ingredients that the program requires in order to be successful?
Well, at a place like Bellarmine, not unlike some of the other areas that are off the beaten path a little bit, is there really can't be any complacency as a coaching staff or the guys in the program. And, you know, that starts with the culture, obviously with the coaching, staying on top of current schemes and being creative, and then in recruiting. Bellarmine is a great place and a wonderful city, but it doesn't really have that name recognition on the East Coast. So it's about really making sure people are aware of what we're about here, getting the name out there, inviting people to see our campus, see what Louisville's about. That's the big challenge for us, is just getting people to see what we have here, see the beautiful campus, the support from our administration. Our president, Dr. Susan Donovan, was at Loyola for a number of years, leading that athletic department. Reported to her for a number of years, and she was there when they built the stadium and won a national championship. So there is a vision here, top to bottom, that we share for being successful at Bellarmine. But certainly, any amount of complacency, could easily be a major obstacle. So it's about being enthusiastic, energetic, and making sure we're bringing the right people here to see what we have.
Yeah, just a quick aside on that point you just made, I was a part of the senior student advisory panel that Dr. Donovan oversaw when I was a student at Loyola, and I can speak firsthand to her passion around the sport. So definitely trust your comments around the interest coming out of the president's office in the men's lacrosse team. But, one of the things that you mentioned that I wanted to follow back up on is your desire to be a head coach. And it's a simple question, but I'm afraid that sometimes it goes unasked because it's simple, and yet the answer sometimes can be really illuminating. Why did you want to be a head coach?
I've been really fortunate to have tremendous mentors throughout my career, going back to a young age, playing for a nationally ranked public high school football program with a coaching legend, Mike Pettine Sr., who just passed away a couple years ago. His son was head coach of the Cleveland Browns and now the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. So to be a part of that and the level of intensity and attention to detail, it's something that always stuck with me. And I think as I gained more experience in lacrosse, especially as a coach, and I was exposed to different styles, I think I always kind of had the maybe some of the DNA from my experience in high school, and having the opportunity to learn from great Division III coaches like Coach Kyle Hannon, who's now at Mercer, from Bill Pilot at Roanoke, really a strong leader of men, really innovative coaches, and then having the opportunity to be a young assistant at Duke University in the early stages of when the volunteer assistant position became a springboard for a lot of coaches. Had an opportunity to go to the Final Four in a year where they were a younger team, where the 2010 team won the national championship with Ned Crotty and all those guys, and then had an experience to work with people like Jordan Wolfe and Luke Dupree and Christian Walsh, all of those guys when they were freshmen. So it was a really back to the basics year at Duke, and I think it opened my eyes for the level of detail and skill development that's possible in lacrosse. So when I kind of came full circle from my high school experience to that, and then got to come to Bellarmine at a very important time in the program, was able to help get some momentum going and be able to coach people like Dylan Ward and some other Canadians and terrific players that have gone on to play in the MLL and LL, and kind of rode that wave a little bit into Rutgers, where I became an offensive coordinator for the first time in my career, and to play an exciting style, to be part of a really supportive environment in an incredibly difficult league. I just felt those opportunities and the background I have led me to be perhaps uniquely qualified for this experience at Bellarmine, to come back and lead with confidence, knowing the steps I've taken and steps others have taken to build successful programs. And I thought this community and this university were ripe for that to happen here under my leadership.
Man, you are speaking my language, and I got to indulge a little bit, or I hope you'll indulge me. So two things that you touched on that personally resonate. So the first is, and I've mentioned this on podcasts previously, but you know, one of my kind of highest level, coolest experiences as a high school lacrosse player was going to Bill Pallett's goalie school, which was actually a hand-me-down for my brother who had done the same and really benefited from that. So
TGS.
It's unbelievable. I was actually, my strongest memory was, so growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, as was the case with so many players that didn't grow up in parts of the country that had, you know, college or high school lacrosse that appeared in the newspaper or on nightly news or whatever, my only exposure to lacrosse was Final Four weekend on ESPN. But that meant that I only got an opportunity to see four teams. And so oftentimes I would gravitate toward the halftime highlight packages when they would show clips throughout the season and the teams that hadn't qualified for the Final Four would be showcased. And I remember, I believe it was 1999, so it would have been my eighth grade year, freshman year in high school. And they were showing the All-American highlight reel, and they got to Mickey Jarbo, who was the first-team All-American goalie that year, and I was a goalie. So immediately saw his highlights, and I'm like, yep, that's my new favorite player. And then a couple years later, I went to goalie school, and Mickey was there. I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is like, you know, the smallness of the – it was the equivalent of going to a, you know, basketball camp and Kobe Bryant was there or something. It was one of those like meaningful experiences. But the other thing that you brought up that I wanted to touch on is, so I went to like one of those big high school football schools as well, and I didn't realize that you went to CB West. And not only have I kind of like been on a search for someone to have this type of conversation with, so were you there around the time that they did that documentary about the last game?
Yeah, I was a sophomore on that team.
That's crazy. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah,
this is a total,
amazing.
This is a total sidebar, and probably 10% of our audience is interested in this, but I'm interested. So can you just give us a little bit of insight as to what it was like to be a sophomore on a team that was featured in a documentary?
Oh, it was unbelievable. Great story. I feel like time has forgotten that a little bit. People should go on YouTube and look it up. I think it's on there. It was incredible. We were ranked number one in the state preseason. You know, our head coach was Mike Pettin Sr. His son, Mike Pettin Jr., was the head coach of a rival high school, North Penn, who happened to be number two in the state. Both teams were loaded with Division I players, and, you know, we didn't know it at the time, but it was, you know, Mike Pettin Sr., our coach's last year in coaching. He had been around forever. And a film crew with some documentary experience, you know, came up to our coach Pettin and asked him if he could follow the team. And, you know, him knowing that it was his last year, I guess, let his guard down a little bit and welcomed them in. And then shortly after, ESPN, that were doing, you know, documentary series on team, high school teams and things like that, you know, came and contacted him as well. And he said, I already gave my word to these guys, but, you know, why don't you go a few miles down the road and ask my son? So it was sort of dueling documentaries as they went through, and then you're going to have to watch it to, if you want to see the end of it. But it has quite the storybook ending. You know, if I wrote it, you know, if I told you it, you wouldn't believe it. So you got to kind of go see it. But you know, that's really, you know, the amount of passion and energy and support from the whole community is something I think I've always been searching for as a coach and been able to experience at a lot of the places I've been at. And certainly a major goal of mine is to build a community support like we had in high school at the college level here at Bellarmine.
Today's public service announcement is for contacts, lens, wearers. I've got a heads up, guys. So earlier this spring, I went on a trip, ran out of contact lens solution, just bought whatever was easily accessible, used it, and like a week or two later, I started to notice that my eyes were really red. I like couldn't figure it out. Come to find out that there are certain solutions that like don't play well with certain types of contacts, and I was in the midst of this fight in my eyes. So got it all sorted out, went to the eye doctor, got it all sorted out, but little did I know that like the contacts I was wearing were like really like old school, and that there were new contacts available, and that it would make my whole situation a lot better. So turned out to be a good thing, but then a good thing turned into an even better thing when it came time to purchase my contacts. I hit up Simple Contacts, and because I had just gotten a new subscription, I uploaded it to the site. It was super easy. They verified it with my eye doctor, and I was able to order these like brand new, super upgraded contact lenses. And it was a great situation. That being said, if I didn't have a prescription because this whole thing didn't unfold, it would have taken 5 minutes to take a simple contacts vision test online. That would be reviewed by my licensed doctor. It would give me a renewed prescription and then allow me to reorder my contacts. The whole thing, regardless of whether or not you have a prescription that is currently like kind of valid and unexpired or not, is really simple, really easy. That's why it's called Simple Contacts. And in an era when there are so many things demanding your time, as I was evidenced to, you know, your eye health is something that, when it is simplified, can be a really great thing. Simple Contacts is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it's designed by ophthalmologists and licensed doctor reviews every test so that you can skip the office visit, but not the care. The reviews speak for themselves. Simple Contacts has been rated 5 stars over 5,000 times in the App Store. You can text with the support team and always speak with a person. There are no automated robot systems at Simple Contacts. It has all the brands and types of lenses that you're familiar with, so you never have to shop around. The vision test is only $20. Compare that to an appointment without insurance. Ooh, yikes. Contact lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. And best of all, Simple Contacts is offering a promotion to our listeners. You can get $20 off of your first Simple Contacts order with the promo code LACROSSE. Make sure to visit simplecontacts.com/lacrosse. Once again, that's simplecontacts.com/lacrosse and promo code LACROSSE at checkout. I can't recommend these guys highly enough. They really helped me out. I'm definitely a Simple Contacts guy from now on. And make sure that the contact lens solution you're using is the appropriate solution for your contacts. Once again, simplecontacts.com/lacrosse and enter the promo code LACROSSE at checkout.
So let's get back to the Knights. The team that you inherit is one that, you know, went through a pretty tumultuous season in 2018. How do you describe the climate around this squad?
Yeah, we have guys that are very excited about what the future holds. A couple guys that are here I recruited and have a relationship with, so that's been exciting. You know, my coaching staff is really built for this. Coach Steve Soriano, who I coached here, and he coached at Bellarmine after and at Princeton last year, to bring him back, someone who understands and knows the potential and the history of this program, is great to have. And then Kyle Bernlohr came over from Cleveland State, where he was for the last 2 years, building a program from scratch, with Dylan Sheridan, and obviously he was a goalie at Maryland, and he'll coach our defense here. So it's a group of guys that are used to building things and being very hands-on, which is really what the team needs. You know, and talk about that, you know, no complacency. And what we found, and this was something that we talked about a lot about Rutgers with the help of a sports psychologist we had, Dr. Wally Bedell. You know, you look at, you know, going from good to great or taking those big leaps, you know, if your team wants to have any amount of success, you know, at first, you know, you need guys that are compliant, that are doing what you ask of them. And from day one, we've had a lot of guys that are compliant. You know, they want to do what they're told, but it's getting to those smaller boxes, those excellent outliers of committed. Are you committed? Are you going to do it on your own, you know, without anyone telling you? Are you going to do the extra work? Are you going to put each other off the field, out of the locker room, in the classroom? And then the last step is what you see with championship programs. You know, Yale comes to mind this past year, is compelled. You know, like you need to do it. It's a burning flame. It's a desire that you have. And so right now, you know, we came into a locker room where a lot of kids are compliant. You know, they want to be successful. They want to be better on the field. They want to do more in the community to have a positive impact. But it's kind of moving that group of compliant guys towards that, to being compelled to really feel that desire to maximize potential and really have the greatest experience possible. So we're working at that every day, and it's a step-by-step process. There really are no shortcuts. I've certainly learned that, and we wish there were at times, but right now we have a group of guys that are working towards being committed to taking on this challenge, and I'm really excited about this weekend where we get to scrimmage Binghamton, introduce our guys to the shot clock in a game competition setting, and then and continue to build from there.
I feel like it's almost obligatory to ask everybody that I have a conversation with about the shot clock because everybody has a nuanced point of view. So I don't really have a question other than shot clock, discuss.
Yeah. Well, I've always been in favor of it. The transition style is what drew me to the sport. I didn't play lacrosse until later, in childhood, early in high school. And my first exposure was going to a Philadelphia Wings game when the Gates were there and Maracek and Bergie and Keith Cromwell and all those guys. And you could just, the action was unbelievable. The crowd was going wild. It was like a Flyers game, but even more rogue in a good way. So that was really what piqued my interest for lacrosse. And then having the opportunity to play in programs and be a part of coaching staff that embraced that pace and that style. And then at Rutgers, being able to bring some of that as an offensive coordinator and play a little bit faster. We were a little different style of fast than maybe some of the other programs that have gotten a lot of notoriety from it. But I felt like that was a program that is now built. We recruited towards it at Rutgers and then sort of built towards shot clock with a lot of two-way mids and a ton of versatility in the level of athletes and understanding of the game. So
when you say a different style at Rutgers than what is typically thought of as playing fast, and I might have just kind of butchered your point a little bit, but like what more specifically do you mean?
It was more of an active patience. So, looking at entering the Big Ten and the big challenge, the mountain that has to climb the Big Ten and be successful, we wanted to do something different, something that's exciting. And when you look at the rosters of Maryland and Hopkins and Penn State and Michigan, Ohio State, it can be overwhelming at times. You see all the names that are on your top recruit lists, and we might not have had as many of those names, but we had kids that were wanting to embrace those challenges and had a certain versatility and energy in our team. So we wanted to be really excellent in the gray areas. So instead of passing the ball around a couple times while we sub, we would do some things. We'd do some pass down, pick downs. We'd do some big little picks below the goal. We'd maybe isolate an offensive midfielder that was now on the defensive end with our defensive midfielder and kind of draw a slide and see if their defensive recoveries and communication is as buttoned up while they're subbing as it is settled in 6-on-6. So, we wanted to thrive in those areas that, an opposing team can't necessarily script or certainly as easily. And then, knowing the level of preparation these days, which is more like football, we were able to be confident going into games knowing that we worked on our system every single day of our transition and early offense stuff that we like to do. Meanwhile, teams preparing for us with unbelievable coaching staffs and talent and commitment, they had a week at most to prepare for what we did. So some teams were more successful than others at stopping it, but it was something we really believed in. And I think that's what, going back to that, that pyramid that committed or that compliant, committed, compelled pyramid, our guys were compelled. They believed in what we were doing top to bottom as a staff. We had a great balanced relationship, and you saw that play out on the field and the type of guys in the locker room. And I see the early signs of that here, and I don't, we're still learning our personnel and all that, but the shot clock is something that's looming in the future. But for us, we've talked about it. We've done some drills. I've implemented some of the things that we like to do at Rutgers, but it's really been more of a, step-by-step, brick-by-brick, with fundamental skill development, the work, the positioning off ball, the posture, everything like that, because, I say it a lot, you cannot outrun or out-scheme fundamental deficiencies at the Division I level of lacrosse, especially nowadays with the emphasis on film and skill development and coaching staffs really working together and being creative. So I'm excited about the shot clock, but I have a lot more to learn about my team before I have a set plan on how to attack that as we get towards the season.
It's interesting, and maybe the subtext of what you're just said kind of leads this to be also, I got to figure it out. this answer to be also. That being said, you mentioned Bellarmine's opportunity within the Southern Conference. You mentioned Rutgers' strategy being honed by the challenges posed by the other five Big Ten teams. I'm interested in your analysis and interpretation of your Southern Conference opponents, because there's a lot of really interesting dynamics within. You mentioned Jacksonville specifically. Air Force had been at the top of the heap, so to speak, for the prior couple of years. Heading into 2018, Richmond certainly has been nip and tuck right there as well, and High Point has also won the league and made it to the NCAA tournament. So in addition to that, Furman, Mercer, VMI, how do you assess and individually account for your peers in your competition?
Well, I have a ton of respect for each and every coaching member of the Southern Conference. I've known some for a long time. I've come up in coaching with a few of these coaches. The first coach who ever hired me and gave me an opportunity to be a graduate assistant at Goucher College is Kyle Hannon at Mercer, who ironically also gave John Torpy one of his first coaching job opportunities, who's now, you know, at High Point. So, you know, we do know each other. Each school is unique, and I think that's part of what makes the Southern Conference so exciting, is each school has its own niche, draws from different areas, and is able to do different things, and has different academic strengths and locations and size of school and style of play. So, you know, I think I haven't done and my staff and I have not done a real deep dive on the rosters and statistics and things like that. I'm certainly excited to do so, but when you look at you know, the team's ability to kind of fluctuate up and down, in the SoCon, teams being pretty bunched closely together. Obviously, you know, some teams have established themselves in the top tier in the past couple of years, but you also see things change quickly. And you know, Air Force went through a difficult situation last year, but you know, you look at their roster, you look at their coaching staff, and you know, that's a program trending towards elite. And that's really what we want to do. I think trend towards being in that conference tournament every single year with an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. So I'm really looking forward to embracing the challenges that each opportunity to play against one of these teams and coaching staff presents.
Understanding that there's an evolution to learning the personality and player profile, skill set type elements of your team and your roster, can you share some early impressions in aggregate beyond the what you've already said about their, I don't know, compliance, their willingness and desire to do what they're asked? What are some of the unique traits of this team and some of the pathways towards being good, being successful?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because, you know, a lot of the things I want to, and I think that's a challenge of mine as being a head coach, is looking at all the drills and all the techniques and all the terminology that evolved, you know, over my 4 years there, where I feel like I graduated with some of those seniors that graduated last year at Rutgers. And in some ways, you know, as a coach, I almost look at it as I'm a freshman again, and hopefully, you know, an educated freshman. But it is new. You can't just pick up where you left off. You know, it's really getting to know people and knowing what comes easily to them, what's difficult. You know, spending, you know, at Duke when I was there, you know, Coach Anowski would always remind us with things if we were frustrated with a player or venting about something. You know, he would always say, you know, did we teach him that? And inevitably we would usually say yes, and then the follow up would be, well, how many times? So that's what I'm finding out here, is just because you say something once or twice, and I've seen executed a million times in the past few years with a group that knew me and understood the expectations, you know, I need to remember that, you know, my voice is new here. The terminology is new, the schemes, the techniques. So that's, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back. You can't skip steps. You know, even though we're scrimmaging this weekend, no, we haven't spent a whole ton of time messing around with our different man-up personnel, because we're still working on spacing and timing and transition and stick work and shooting techniques and all of that. But as far as, you know, what started to emerge with our team is, you know, I think on the defensive end, there is a little bit of continuity on that end. and some strong leadership, some strong voices of guys who are really looking to do the extra and ask the questions and evaluate themselves. And overall, as a program, we've made a big point of embracing weakness and attacking it. So, you know, guys that maybe aren't used to having to use two hands as much or, you know, certain techniques that are uncomfortable, and we say, go mess it up. Like, that's what practice is for. Don't hide in lines. You know, first of all, we notice when you do, whether we address it or not every single time. Well, we know, and you know, and that's what practice is for. So, you know, we're not going to criticize and blow the whistle and make guys run every single time we drop a pass or a drill doesn't go the way we want to. But, you know, we expect tremendous effort. We expect attention and detail, and we expect guys to learn at a Division I level too. You know, we're teaching guys how to watch film. You know, people, you know, you watch Kentucky basketball, you know, you watch the college teams in town. Well, that's what we are. We're you know, we don't have the rings, but you know, we're the highest level of organized college lacrosse in Division I. So you should see yourself the same way with how you treat your bodies, you know, your nutrition habits, your sleep habits. So those are the things we're really focusing on is developing as a team, but certainly on the defensive end, having some guys with a lot of experience. They work well together. They communicate. Coach Bernlohr is really, really, you know, has really been hands-on with them about finding what they're comfortable with, you know, what he's used to in his experience at Maryland and Cleveland State, and really merging that together. And as a coaching staff, you know, we talk about everything. We're excited to get on the board and educate each other on what we've done in the different programs and what we can do with this team as we go forward. So I think there's a ton of potential. It's just, you know, step by step, you know, building those expectations and abilities.
Well, Coach Jim Mitchell, really appreciate your time. This is a really enjoyable podcast. I'm gonna have to head to YouTube and make sure I check out the Last Game documentary about CB West versus North Penn. Take me all the way back to my high school days. I remember watching it, and certainly we look forward to following the Knights as they progress through the remainder of the fall and into the spring 2019 season.
Oh, this has been great. Thanks for having me. Look forward to being in touch.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.